If you turn to the book of Genesis, chapter 16, and we're going to read the whole chapter this morning. Genesis chapter 16. Let us hear the word of God. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go, sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai ill-treated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from, and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she said. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now with child, you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility towards all his brothers." She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roi. It is still there, between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. Well, we're looking together these Sunday mornings at the life of Abram, the father of the faithful. We're seeking to learn lessons from Abram's life that will help us today. Now remember, Abram had been given two remarkable promises by the Lord. One, that the Lord would make him into a great nation. And two, the Lord would give him the land of Canaan to his descendants forever. In other words, Abraham was promised children and a land. Last week, chapter 15, after he'd been in the land of Canaan for some years, Abram asks the Lord about these two promises. First, he asks him about children. Lord, he says, "You've given me no children. I'm getting on in years. Eliezer of Damascus stands to inherit my estate. Is he to be reckoned as my offspring?" A reasonable question. The Lord said, "No, Abram. A son from your own body will be your heir." In other words, Abram, you are going to have children. And to prove it, the Lord gave Abram a sign. He was to go out and he was to look at the stars and count them if he could. His descendants were to be that numerous. What a marvelous sign. Then Abram asked the Lord about the land. He promised the land, but he didn't yet own a square inch of it. How shall I know that I'm going to gain possession of this land? He asked. Do you remember what happened? He was given another sign. He had to bring a heifer and a goat and a ram 3 years old, along with a dove and a pigeon. He had to halve the animals, arrange them in parallel lines. And later, when it was dark, a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. What was happening? The Lord was entering into a covenant with Abram, binding himself to keep his promise of giving the land to Abraham's offspring. Well, what a great day that was for Abraham, wasn't it? God had reassured him that a son from his own body would be his heir, and he got a sign to prove it. God had reassured him that his descendants would inherit the land, and he'd been given a sign, blazing torch through the pieces of the animals, and God binding himself in covenant to him. Two great promises, and now two signs as well. God had become so real to Abraham that day. You've had days like that, have you? Days when the Lord has been so real to you? When you felt he was right there beside you? One of our members was telling me last week of just one such day in his Christian life. Well, it was such a day for Abram. The Lord had spoken to him directly. The Lord had answered his questions. The Lord had reassured him with some gracious signs. The Lord had bound himself to Abraham in covenant. One of those mountaintop experiences. But then we come to chapter 16, our passage for the day. And things are so different now. Well, we'd be forgiven for wondering if it's the same man we're dealing with. No mention here of Abraham speaking to the Lord. He just seems to be making a mess of everything. It's almost as if the events of chapter 15 hadn't happened. And there's the point, I guess. Nothing had changed outwardly, had it? Abraham still had no children. And he was still living in a tent on land he didn't own. Little had changed. That's true to life too, isn't it? Days when we feel elated, when we feel God so near to us, we've met him, his word is so relevant to us. And then, there's a sense of letdown, anticlimax. When on a Monday morning we get back to the routine of our daily lives in the office or in the classroom, nothing seems to have changed. Now, what's the danger in that situation? The danger is to give in to our impatience, isn't it? To take things into our own hands, to work out things for ourselves, to make our homemade solutions to our problems. That's what Abraham does here. And that's what I want us to think about this morning. Faith and homemade solutions. First, look at what was involved. What was involved in Abraham's homemade solution? Well, notice it began with a suggestion from his wife, Sarai. The one who'd left Haran and Ur before that with him, the one who'd stuck with him these 10 years that they'd wandered around from place to place in this land of promise, his life partner. Notice it concerned an issue, childlessness, which Abram himself had just had settled once and for all, he thought. And here, the very same issue is raised again. Notice it came to him at home. the place where we assume we can relax our spiritual defenses, where we think that we are in charge and the devil can't get to us. And notice it involved what in those days was a very reasonable and accepted solution to their problem. It was the done thing in those days. And that's illustrated by some of the old Assyrian marriage contracts and law codes. The done thing for a childless couple to have a child by a slave, and for that child to be reckoned as theirs. This was one way for Sarai to have a child. It seems from the way Sarah suggests this, that this was what the Lord must be telling them. The Lord has kept me from having children, she said. Well, that was right, wasn't it? But that doesn't mean that her inference was right. So here's Abram faced with an issue that was dear to him. He wanted a son and heir. He knew that God had promised him a son and heir. It's his wife's suggestion. It's the done thing of the day. It seemed reasonable. Could this be the Lord's answer? And the really sad thing is that it came so soon after the Lord had renewed his promise to Abram that he would provide a child, naturally, and had confirmed that with a remarkable experience. That's so often, isn't it, the way? It's that Monday morning syndrome. Things seem so different in the cold light of a Monday morning, don't they? They did for Abram. See, he's not a super saint. He's just like us. Being reckoned righteous by God, chapter 15, verse 6, we saw it last week. Being in the right with God didn't mean he was perfect. The man whose faith had been able to rise as he counted the stars and realized that God who put them there was the God who was going to give him offspring, now sees his faith collapse before his wife's desperation. Man who could dream dreams in the desert couldn't communicate those dreams to his partner in life. The man who was willing to wait for that blazing torch to appear couldn't persuade his wife to wait any longer. Someone said, the heights of spiritual exaltation can so easily be followed by the depths of domestic disintegration. I just need to remember the disciples. They're on the Mount of Transfiguration, seeing great things. Down in the valley, they couldn't do anything for a demon-possessed laddie. So easy, isn't it, to make homemade solutions? God promises to bless us and guide us in the way we should go. He has a perfect plan for our lives, and we're thrilled to hear that. But in the cold light of Monday morning, back home, amongst family and friends, at work, it seems so different. And the temptation is to do what everybody else is doing, to take the world's way. Well, perhaps that's what God wants us to do anyway, we ask. It's reasonable, and it's possible. Remember, what's reasonable and what's possible isn't always what's best for a Christian. Just because everybody is doing it doesn't mean we should do it. Abram's mistake here was he never asked the Lord. He so quickly forgot what the Lord had just told him. Had he shared with his wife what the Lord had shared with him? Perhaps he'd come home so full of that experience, bursting to share it with her. And she'd said something like, you and your visions, man, what good are they to us? Here I am doing all the work around here, and you spend your days dreaming in the desert. And you brought us on this trip from a good home. Now you give me a son. Was Abraham more concerned to keep right with his wife than to keep right with God? Seems like it, doesn't it? Perhaps that's why we make our homemade solutions, because we want to keep in with our friends, with our nearest and dearest. We don't want to be crushed or rejected. And we forget what God has said to us. Abraham's homemade solution involved listening to his wife, doing the reasonable accepted thing, with a view to doing God's work for him, forgetting God's promises, forgetting even to consult the Lord. Notice secondly, what Abraham's man-made solution led to. What his solution led to? Well, notice first, it led to the very thing they wanted. Hagar conceived. She was going to have a child, Abram's child. And it turned out to be a boy. Just what they wanted. A son and heir for them. Just because a thing works out as we plan doesn't mean that it's right or that it's the best for us. You know, I sometimes hear Christians say to me, oh, this must be God's will because everything's worked out just right. That may not be God's will. They got what they wanted, but they got an awful lot more as well. A lot they hadn't bargained for. From the day Hagar knew she was pregnant, there was tension in the home. She began to despise her mistress, and Sarai turned against everyone. She blamed Abram for Hagar's contempt. She blamed Hagar for showing it. She's almost blaming the Lord. Now she calls on him to do something about it. See, the Lord really only comes into Sarai's thoughts when she wants vengeance. But Sarah had volunteered Hagar for the job, hadn't she? Sarah told Abram what to do, hadn't she? And here she is, blaming the lot of them. Now, it's all so predictable, isn't it? But, of course, we don't see the future rationally in the heat of the moment when we make our homemade solutions, do we? That girl in love longing to be married can't see that that fellow will lead her to a life of misery. Everybody else can see it, but she can't. And that fellow who longs to have money in his pocket cannot see that that job, well paid now maybe, is just a blind alley. Everybody else can see it. He can't. This just led to misery for everyone. Sarai, Abraham, Hagar, Ishmael, the child. And misery to this very day for Jews and Arabs who were descended from Ishmael. See, Sarah, verse 2, Sarah had hoped to build a family. That's what she wanted. She wanted to build a family through this. It led to destruction rather than building, didn't it? The whole thing led them to getting what they wanted. It led to misery. It also led to Abram giving in to Sarah and abdicating leadership in the home. Instead of insisting that Sarah treat Hagar fairly and live with the consequences, he threw all the weight of the problem on Sarah for decision and for action. Your servant is in your hands. Do with her whatever you want. Instead of talking to Hagar about her attitude, couldn't face it. Having given in to Sarai once, it was so hard to say no the second time. That's always the way, isn't it? One mistake leads to another. And it was something they had to live with all their days. The child was born, he lived, he grew up. Verse 12, God describes him as a wild donkey of a man, with his hand against everyone, living in hostility to his brothers. He was to be a constant worry and threat to Abram and his family. And how accurately that has been fulfilled in the Arabs. People whose hand seems to be against everyone, especially the Jews, to this very day. Abram had to live with the consequences all his days. And so for us, homemade solutions may appear to work. We get what we want, but inevitably they lead to misery for all concerned and to consequences, undreamed of consequences that we have to live with all our days. Well, notice in the third place what the Lord was doing in and through Abram's homemade solution. What was the Lord doing? Well, at first sight, it might seem the Lord was doing nothing. He's hardly mentioned here. But the Lord was at work, as he always is. Just as he was keeping Sarah from having children, so he allowed Hagar to conceive. He could so easily have stopped that, couldn't he? Prevented Hagar from becoming pregnant. But no. Then notice the Lord was being compassionate. He was being compassionate to Hagar of all people. Sarah began ill-treating her. Verse 6 tells us. We don't know what she did, whether she beat her or made her work particularly hard. We don't know. Whatever, Hagar had enough. And she ran away, making her way back to Egypt where she'd come from. She hadn't gone too far on the way to Egypt. When, look what happened. Verse 7, the angel of the Lord found her. There in the desert, alone, on the run. The Lord. And I think it was the Lord, because Hagar says that herself in verse 13. It was the Lord in this angel. The Lord found her and began talking to her. Isn't that characteristic of our God? To be there, even with outcasts and foreigners and victims of human sin. He doesn't give up. The Lord found Hagar. Not as a result of her seeking him. Not as a result of her prayers to him. She was on the run. He is a seeking God. And the conversation with the Lord, with the angel, helps Hagar to see her situation in a clearer, calmer light and to come to a sensible, practical decision about what to do. Her only hope is to go back and share the future with Abram and Sarah. Even slavery under Sarai is better than death for herself and her child. But notice she's given the promise of descendants too numerous to count. What a compassionate God. To find Hagar, to reassure her, to give her promises. And more importantly still, to reveal himself to her. You shall name him Ishmael, meaning God hears. For the Lord has heard your misery. Hagar, I am the God who hears. I've heard your cries. Every time you name the name of your son, you remember that. God hears. And he knew what was going to happen. He knew what the boy was going to be like. And Hagar came away from that place with a new name for God. Not just the God who hears, but the God who sees. She recognizes that the Lord Abraham's God is the God who sees everything. He knew what happened. He knows that she's been wronged. And he cares for her. He's going to protect her. She can return home. She can return to Abraham because she's met God and got to know him better. The Lord's acting in compassion. But the Lord's also acting in compassion in rebuking Abram and Sarah by sending Hagar back. The Lord is giving them a chance to see what they've done. There she is. She returns with the story of God finding her, speaking to her, revealing himself to her as the God who hears and sees. Wouldn't that be a reminder to Abram and Sarah? Every time in the future when they call the boy Ishmael, when they remember the Lord hears? The way Sarah had blamed God, he'd heard. The way Abram had told Sarah to get on with her dealings to Hagar, he'd heard. The way Sarah treated Hagar, God had seen. God's revealing himself and gently rebuking them. You see, the Lord allows us to go on with our homemade solutions because we're his children, not his robots. But even in that, he deals with us in compassion and gently rebukes us. But there's another thing, before we finish, there's another thing. At the beginning of the chapter, the Lord was wanting them to wait his time, to be patient. He'd made promises, specifically about a child. And Sarah was right to say the Lord had kept her from having children. She was wrong in making alternative arrangements and homemade solutions. Abram should have said, "No, dear, we'll wait." But that's hard, isn't it? That is so hard. Especially when we want something. And when we want to do something. We don't like waiting. The longer they waited, the more impossible the whole thing would be. But that's precisely what God wanted them to realize. That he was their reward. He wanted them to trust in the bare word of his promise. When everything was against them. And so when they made their mistake, the promise still stood. And God wanted them to learn patience. And he was going to teach them patience. Look at verse 16. Abraham was 86 years old. Look at verse 1 of chapter 17. When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him. You don't have to have higher maths. 13 years. 13 years without a word from the Lord. 13 years, Sarah getting older and older and less likely to have children. 13 years waiting with that reminder of their mistakes, growing older, God seeing, God hearing, everything. And God's teaching Abram not only to trust him, but to wait his time, to be patient, not to take things into his own hands. Are you being tempted to do God's work for him? To hurry things on a bit? To work things out for yourself? Are you being pressurized by family and friends to do what everybody else is doing these days? Well, it might well get you what you want. But you'll have to live with the consequences. Perhaps some of us have resorted to homemade solutions. We haven't waited God's time. We've done things that everybody's doing. And today we're experiencing the misery and some of the Lord's rebukes. Well, you remember, God hasn't abandoned you. God hasn't abandoned you any more than He'd abandoned Abram. His promise stands firm. And whilst we may have to live with the folly of the consequences, God is waiting to be gracious. He wants us to trust Him. We're going to sing in a moment, God moves in a mysterious way. That's the first line of the hymn. Well, He does often move in mysterious ways, but the point is He moves. God moves. Are you waiting for Him? Are you trusting Him? Or are you trying to move Him on with your homemade solutions? Well, may God bless His word to us today and help us to wait patiently as we trust in Him. Let's sing that hymn then. It's number 256. 256. God moves in a mysterious way. He has wonders to perform. He plants His footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm.